It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kick start it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, and it is time to get nerdy, everybody. Welcome to episode 301 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am Maction, one of your hosts, and I am joined tonight by my bestie, by my comrade in gaming commentary, not just the first option, but the best option, Mr. Lomgaluka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. And tonight, for the next hour, we're going to bring you everything as it relates to video games, news, history, trivia, lawsuits, and everything in between. But first, gotta catch up. Mr. Nice Guy, it's been a week since we've been together. How the heck are you?
Dude, I'm doing really good. And I feel like over the past few years, I always have some story about travel and fun stuff that I've done or places I'm going and doing.
Yeah, I've got to live vicariously through you. Come on.
Well, hey, you've done some pretty cool travel the past few months as well. This next week is spring break for my kids, Mac. And so, you know, last year we went big. We did a big family trip. This year we're keeping it a little more simple. We're doing a road trip. We're going to go hit Myrtle Beach. We're going to see North Carolina. We're going to do South Carolina. And despite the beach time, the thing that I am most excited for, Mac, is hitting up those retro game stores that they're going to have on the way and in South Carolina and getting some Game Boy games for my analog pocket. But most importantly, creating memories with the family. Myrtle Beach is great. Mini golf, all kinds of fun stuff. It's going to be great. So hyped for that.
That sounds fantastic. I don't really have good conceptions of how many retro game stores out there, but I can guarantee you more than are here out in the middle of nowhere. So I envy you this trip.
Well, Mac, I gotta ask you, have you ever eaten at Waffle House? Have you ever tried Waffle House before?
I have never. I just don't think so. I don't remember Nebraska having any. Michigan may have had some Waffle Houses, but I don't remember them if they were. So,
well, I'm not here to tell you that Waffle House is amazing food. In fact,
don't need to be good food to be an institution.
That's exactly right. If you Google Waffle House or YouTube Waffle House, you'll probably see videos of people fighting. Maybe it'll be employees fighting amongst themselves. Some may be employees fighting customers. It might be customers fighting customers. Or it might be employees fighting their bosses or people on the street.
So
lots of fighting.
If all it is just fighting, 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 when does the food come?
That's a good question. And luckily, I've never been in a Waffle House where there was fighting. But my kids, for whatever reason, love Waffle House. And I think it's because we were on a trip sometime and we were looking for some food, and hey, there's a Waffle House, let's eat there. And it's not the best food, Mac. It's waffles and bacon and eggs. It's totally sufficient, but the pricing is perfect. It's very, very affordable, and my kids love it. And so whenever we travel somewhere where there's a Waffle House, we're eating at Waffle House. So I think they're excited for some average waffles. I'm excited to watch them eat these waffles. And, you know, there's part of me that's hoping we see a fist fight while we're eating these waffles. Because nothing better than some entertainment that's free while you're eating your food.
Not the entertainment I was expecting, but heck, yeah.
South Carolina, here we come. Waffle House, the only restaurant where you tip the waitstaff and also tip the semi-professional fighters. That's exactly right. So, Mac, what's new with you, man? Anything you want to share with the people before we dive in?
Amazing. That was fantastic. No, I just have to say it's been a rather normal week, although this last week we had a chance to play some more games than we usually did, and it made for a very relaxing and enjoyable week. But I'll talk about more of that at the end of the show.
We're going to do what we do best and hop right up in that gaming news. Episode 301 is a go. Thank you for those of you who are here live and after the fact. I'm very parched, Mac. I'm glad I got a big cup of water here. We got a few news stories to talk about today. First one is on GameSpot.com. This is written by George Yang. I don't know if we've read a story from him today. Shout out, George, if this is one of your first articles on GameSpot. Here's what he writes. LinkedIn has confirmed that it is adding games onto its social media platform. However, no launch date has been announced yet. We're playing with adding puzzle-based games within the LinkedIn experience to unlock a bit of fun, deepen relationships, and hopefully spark the opportunity for conversations, a LinkedIn spokesperson told TechCrunch. Quote, stay tuned for more. According to leaked screenshots from web developer Nima Auji, the three games that look to be in development are Queens, Cross Climb, and Blueprint. They all seem to be rather simple puzzles. I think it's meant to say puzzle games you'd see on platforms such as Wordle from the New York Times. Players can track how often they play in order to keep their daily streaks. LinkedIn is owned by Microsoft, but it's unclear how much involvement it has over this initiative, etc., etc., etc. Mac, do you use LinkedIn? Are you a LinkedIn user?
I do not use LinkedIn. I think back in my undergrad days, I was required to make a LinkedIn account as part of like a general ed class or whatever. But yeah, I'm not on there, and I'm certainly not wordling.
So I guess my question for you, and this is kind of a theme with everything we talk about, is the potential effect of this type of gaming on the industry. They claim that it can help deepen relationships.
I mean, I agree.
How so? How on a platform that is meant to be a professional platform is this deepening relationships?
Hang on. I'm not saying it'll deepen relationships there. I'm just saying that I agree wholeheartedly with the proposition that video games can help deepen relationships. I mean... Godspeed to them trying to deepen relationships on LinkedIn, but yeah, I don't know how it does it for them.
Yeah, and so like for the industry as a whole, what do you think about this?
Well,
I think this leans towards oversaturation, just to give you my opinion. But what are your thoughts, man?
I know that we very much are in a situation where there is so much good video games out there.
Exactly.
But you know, I feel like the Farmvilles of the Facebook era. So we're now that LinkedIn is doing, because I guess they're 7-8 years behind the times. What they're doing, I don't think hurts the experiences of games in other places. Maybe it takes a little bit more of your time, but I think there's still plenty of room, and not plenty of room if you want to be a completionist, but, you know, I think at some point in time, we've all got to let that dream go.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't even think that gaming on Netflix is helping. I don't think it's necessary, and so I don't see how this is any different, and I don't see how you'd want to deepen relationships on a professional platform through gaming or through any other hobby for that matter. Now, granted, you can share some personal posts about yourself. Hey, I like to fish. Hey, I ran a marathon. Hey, I beat cancer.
Yes.
Those are all fantastic. You know, you deepen relationships through the content that you provide. But I just don't think that video games, as much as I love them, are the solution for every social media platform to get more engagement. And that's ultimately what they're trying to do, is get more engagement. I notice as I scroll at X, which used to be known as Twitter, there's a lot of things that pop up that either interest me or frustrate me. And the algorithm is very, very accurate in putting stuff in front of my face from people who I do not even follow that gets me to inadvertently spend more time on the platform. And I think that LinkedIn is trying to do that, and I don't think video games are the way to do it. Leave my art alone. Allow my art to exist in the ways that it is most effectively achieved, as opposed to three puzzle games to quote unquote deepen relationships. Those are my thoughts.
I could hardly agree with you more, Mr. Nice Guy. It certainly isn't bringing anything new, especially with titles like that. Come on, if we've learned nothing else, if you want to sell units, you got to have yourself a good, solid, killer app, a game, an exclusive, a platform. LinkedIn, now is the time for you to dig deep, get creative, make it happen, guys.
Don't get in trouble with your employer for setting a high score during the hours of 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. Just be careful. That's what I'm saying to people out there.
Promote synergy, but maybe not this way.
Well, Max, speaking of things that are new and kind of in the same proximity as Farmville, which you mentioned, I want to talk to you about a game that I think you play and a recent update that came to it. This is on PCGamer.com by Andy Chalk. It's about Stardew Valley. Barone Watch 2024 has concluded. The Stardew Valley 1.6 update is now live, and that means we finally got the full rundown of all the changes in the long-awaited update. Stardew Valley's 1.6 update, Lest You've Forgotten, was intended to be a small thing. Creator Eric Barone warned players in 2022 that it would mostly be focused on support for modders, and quote, won't be huge. That promise didn't last long as Barone kept piling things on, a new farm type, three new festivals, support for 8-person multiplayer, new late-game content, and more. The promise of all those new things to see and do naturally got fans properly wound up, and Barone's tease that the update adds so much stuff to all the different aspects of the game did not calm the situation down, nor did his decision last week to start revealing the 1.6 patch notes in a slow drip litany of one patch note at a time. Mac, the 1.6 patch is out for Stardew Valley, and I want to start by you selling me on Stardew Valley. This is a game that you play, correct?
Yes, it is a game that I've played, and at a previous version, I would say that I beat it. So, Mr. Nice Guy, Stardew Valley is a game that lets you, you know, just have a cozy experience. You can farm on your grandfather's old farm. You can try out selling things to the local place. Or maybe if you feel more corporate bent, you can throw in your lot behind Joja Mart, the two competing Pierre's v. Joja Mart, community center or corporation. You can go the way you want. Really, you can just go those two ways. You want romance? Mr. Nice Guy, we got romance. Many romance options. There is many eligible bachelors and bachelorettes. There are people in the town who, as you gain friend, as they gain your trust, or you gain their trust and friendship, opens up new areas, whole new things that you can do with them. Beat poetry, all sorts of wild stuff that's just cozy, but not really. But there is also excitement. Because you've got the mines, you've got fishes that are trying to, you know, what's an RPG without fishing is hardly an RPG at all. You go to the depths of the mines, combat, fighting, harvesting, animal husbandry. It's got it all on.
What?
It's got it all. Animal husbandry. That's when you, like, you know, take care of, like farm animals.
Got it. I did not know what that meant, and that's not what I would have assumed. So anyway, let's
Fair
continue.
Enough. So, yeah, but it's got it all wrapped up in a nice cutesy package with mysteries to boot and chances to even do a little bit of magic from time to time. And yeah, there's a lot of content in Stardew Valley, and clearly even more. But I think it's important to note that it is a game meant to take a lot of time and be a cozy experience, be something that you spend a lot of time doing at your own leisure. And that's the best pitch I think I can give you for Stardew Valley.
So from what you know of me, am I going to enjoy Stardew Valley? And I guess maybe the bigger question is, did you enjoy it? It sounds like you did.
Yes, I did quite enjoy Stardew Valley. I think, Lam, that all of us have that time in our life where we really, really need to unwind, de-stress,
yeah.
And video games can be that. And I found that that Stardew Valley was especially good at giving me, you know, time in my life when I needed it to just have something comforting and relaxing. I think, you know, I think if you're having one of those times, I think you would thoroughly enjoy Stardew. Not to say that you can't enjoy it if things are good. It's just especially soothing when, you know, when you got stuff going on.
Understood. And last question, at least related to Stardew Valley, is 1.6 update with all of the content that it has going to make you hop back in? Especially now you've got that lightning fast internet and it has 8-player multiplayer.
So I find that 8-player multiplayer might be a bit too many for me. I might still stick with the 4. I think the most I've ever had before was like 3 people at once. But yeah, this end game content, I'd love to experience that, load up my old save and you know, see what else there is to offer. Last time I popped in, there had been a whole island added. So that was fun.
Well, Mac, I want to share one other news story that relates to this a little bit, because we've reached a point now where games are not necessarily all games as service, but many of them get update after update after update that provide quality content. Think Minecraft, think Stardew Valley, and now think World of Warcraft. This is on PCGamer.com by Heather Newman. Here is what Heather writes. Today's announcement of Warcraft's next patch event, 10.2.6's pirate-themed Plunderstorm, marks a number of firsts for the venerable massively multiplayer RPG. It will launch today with no player testing and includes a wild 60-player Battle Royale mode. Not only is this the first time that the mode will appear in Warcraft, it's not on standard servers or using existing characters. Players will choose between their normal servers and the Plunderstorm event when they log into Modern Warcraft client. Its rewards will include a bunch of stuff that I'm not going to read, but dual mode rewards that are also a first for the games. Classic players will need to download the modern client to play, but do not need to own Dragonflight, it says. Mac, I think about No Man's Sky, I think about Cyberpunk 2077, and the fact that these games were all broken when they first came out. I even think about Halo Master Chief Collection, which now is the way to play Halo if you're looking to play those old games. But at launch, it was really, really struggling. These are not necessarily games as service, but they're games that got updated, that got fixed, that got new life breathed into them through updates. Are game reviews irrelevant at this day and age? Knowing that we can get updates for years to come.
No, I don't think so. As always, I come in here with a lot of strength and conviction, but I'm always willing to walk that back later as you prove to me how wrong I am.
Rarely.
Oh, often. But I will say that I think that there was an old saying, and I forget which luminary of the video game world said it, about, you know, a rushed game being bad forever,
right?
But a, you know, game you take your time with is released how it was intended. And of course, that is a dynamic that has changed since those days, because we can update and change those. So, you know, definitely a slightly different take on it. But one of the things that I will say is important, especially for reviews, especially for early reviews, is that it can express our dissatisfaction in a very palpable way, in a way that that often can be hard to quantify otherwise. Now, you can quantify, like, how many people are getting, you know, like, refunds, but I find that reviews are still very good at telling us, hey, wait until this thing is fixed. Wait until they address these concerns.
Yeah.
I think we're always going to need reviews, the brave, the bold, to go forward and say what needs changing. Of course, at the same time, I'm thinking about some reviews that I've heard for a game I was playing recently, that it was kind of apparent, like, they didn't play through the game before they did. So it's this weird sort of mix, because we need reviews and we also need reviewers who do the full deep dive before they say this. But no, I think even with games being reviewed, I think it's worthwhile pinning those reviews to, like, the revision that something was put on. When someone has something to say about Cyberpunk 2077, that's fantastic. It lets me know what to happen. And the sort of update that fixed everything was Project something?
I can't remember the number of the update, but yeah, it fixed a lot, yeah.
It would be worthwhile to know, hey, this review was done when this was on, you know, 1.1, and this is now at 1.9, or what have you.
Yeah, I think those are very, very valid points. I think the biggest challenge is when these games come out and they are not done, we have no way really of knowing if the developer is going to go back and fix it.
Well, and it's not like they give us their roadmap, or it's not like we're privy to the vision of it in a lot of ways either.
And that's the thing is, I mean, I think back to No Man's Sky, which I have not played, but I know that it was broken at launch. In fact, and I'm not making this up, an article popped up as I was looking at PC Gamer today that was talking about how I think it was PC Gamer that was talking about how the play. It wouldn't have been PC Gamer because it was about PlayStation. It was saying that the PlayStation Store was giving refunds for Cyberpunk 2077, and this I clicked on it, and this was back from 2020. Mm. Now, the game was so broken back then that they were saying, hey, if you bought this, we apologize. We'll give you your money back. You'll lose access to the game, but we'll give you back your money. You know, nowadays, Cyberpunk 2077 has come out with DLC, with bug fixes, and it's a phenomenal game. And CD Projekt Red really fixed it. Same thing with No Man's Sky, same thing with many, many other games. And so I asked an extreme question, are video game reviews irrelevant? No, they're not. But like you said, I think there should be caveats that, hey, right now this game is broken, but let's see if they work to fix it. And in my mind, a second review or an addendum should be done in circumstances where this happens, because we see it happening a lot. And that's our news for the week.
All right. Well, we've taken a look at things around us right now. Why don't we look into the past? This last week, in years that came before, some video game history. Now, Mr. Nice Guy, I have a couple of masterpieces that have come out this last week in years before. One that is a masterpiece, perhaps only to me, released for the PSP in 2006, called Mega Man Powered Up.
Nice.
You know, the interesting thing was, is I only got my hands on this much later on via an emulation, because I never had a PSP. But I will say it had this sort of chibi animation for all the robot masters, a lot nice. More ability to personalize the game, some robot masters that got left out of the earlier games that you could play, things from the cutting room floor, and of course the ability to play as, you know, as either Mega Man or Proto Man, and also to be able to play as the fellow robot masters on their quest, and just a lot of really fantastic things in Mega Man Powered Up. It was kind of the perfect thing that that a Mega Man lover such as me, which I'm sure you can't tell from the background of my studio here, as those of you who are here with us live can see, but yeah, a fantastic game to bring a lot of that stuff back together. But something that's a bit more relevant, a game that Mr. Nice Guy, I believe you mentioned a few episodes ago for the Genesis in 1994, Castlevania Bloodlines.
That's a phenomenal game. And, you know, it's one that I have played, but I have never owned the physical copy.
Any plans to change that?
No, simply because I don't collect for Sega.
Yeah,
and fair. I actually don't have a Genesis. I'd love to get one. It's just not a priority in terms of my retro collection at this point. But I have played it, and very, very good game. I believe it was only on Sega. Is that correct, or was it also on other systems? I don't remember.
That follows my understanding that it was only released in the Sega Genesis, at least officially.
Nice. Yeah, phenomenal game, and I'm a sucker for Castlevania. One for the combat, two for the exploration aspects.
Yeah.
And they just generally, they are all good. There's a few that are mediocre. I don't think any of them are bad, though.
So, important question. I forget the names of the two characters, but were you Team Whip or Team Spear for Castlevania Bloodlines?
You know, the Whip is so iconic. I'm almost always going to go with the Whip when it comes to Castlevania.
Me, I'm a contrarian, so when I played through Castlevania Bloodlines, I opted for the Spear character, whatever his name was. But I will say, to anybody who plays through it, there's an amazing cheesy setup, a cheesy strat that I got to use on the final boss, because you do this sort of pole vault maneuver with the spear, during which time you've got a window of being invulnerable, invincibility frames, if you will. And so against the final boss, I was able to spam that move, destroying the boss, but also staying safe, which was great because I was at very low health at the time. Anyway, if you need tips, reach out to me. I'll help, especially if you're on those later bosses. Well,
love it.
Mr. Nice Guy, last one, second to last thing to talk about, released on the PC in 1995, Descent. a masterpiece of sort of flight simulation. Although you're inside of basically mines, it's like 3D tight quarters. Descent was one of those games that really scared me when I played it initially. Of course, I was young and everything, but like, it's got, at least for me, it had some very horror-tastic vibes. Yeah, good stuff. Well, last thing I wanted to talk about, a real quick thing. You know, in various years, I've kind of put some time each, you know, history to talk about certain things like video game movies, or special people, special women in gaming. This year, now that we're past 300, I was thinking about talking about some of like the early game development studios. And I wanted to just throw one out here, the cool story about Origin Systems, which wound up getting founded this month in 1983. But it dates back to the late 70s, where Richard Garrett, right, he had been making these games. And notably, he may have made the first RPG computer game, Akalabeth was the name of it. But maybe more on that another time. So we're in the summer of 79, and Richard is working at a computer store, and he makes his first game for the Apple II computer. His boss, you know, because of course he's a young teen, he shows it off, and his boss is just like, hey, that's pretty cool. If you want, you can sell copies here at the computer store. And so he does. His parents front him a bunch of money, and his dad was an astronaut for NASA, so like they had some scratch.
He had that NASA money.
He did. He had that NASA money. And so anyway, he packages up these, you know, these 5 1/4 inch floppies, because that's what they had at the time, puts them up in Ziploc bags with printed game manuals that he printed out for them. Because that is, I kid you not, that's how we were selling games back there and then in the late 70s, early 80s, computer games. So he sells those, which don't do too well, but an actual publisher gets a hold of one of them and signs him up. And this marks what is considered to be the first, at least published, RPG computer game. Anyway, we fast forward a little bit, and we get some more games such as the Ultima series. And long about the time that Ultima 3 comes out, Sierra had been publishing the games, and there was a dispute about them cheating him out of some of his royalty money. So he's like, well, you know what? I'm going to start my own game company, Origin Systems, to be both game developer as well as game publisher. And, you know, the idea is you can't skimp it and skimp out on my royalties if I'm my own boss. And so this month, Origin Systems is born from humble beginnings and a game publisher trying to, you know, cheat him out of royalties. And that, I think, is all we have time for this evening for video game history.
Dude, that is a dope story, Mac. So it's interesting. We're what, like several years into the podcast at this point?
Yes.
And it would have been easy with this segment for you to just start repeating year after year, but you have kept it fresh. You kept it funky fresh.
Aww.
And there's new stuff in gaming history that was not the stuff from the previous year's episode in the same week, and it's awesome. Well done.
Well, thank you. History is big and vast, and I'm glad that you appreciate it, because some of this takes more time than others.
I bet. Well, hey, it's time for our next segment, the topic of the week,
woo-hoo,
where we discuss something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Now, as you know, we often do indie game of the week. However, Mac and I want to give each indie game that we are playing its due diligence. And sometimes between episodes, we just can't really put the time that we feel is necessary into a game each week. So we're going to take a week off, and we're going to talk about something else. And then next week, or when we record again, we'll be back at the old segment. Mac, this is a huge story in the industry. Full disclosure, I sent this one to Mac in advance so that he could think about it, although I think he already knew about it. This is directly from Steam. Here is what it says. Introducing Steam Families, posted March 18th, 2024. It says, hello, we are excited to announce Steam Families, available today in the Steam Beta Client. Steam Families is a collection of new and existing family-related features. It replaces both Steam Family Sharing and Steam Family View, giving you a single location to manage which games your family can access and when they can play. To get started, you can create a Steam family and then invite up to 5 family members. You can manage your family from your Steam client, mobile device, or web browser. When you join a Steam family, you automatically gain access to the shareable games that your family members own and that they will also be able to access the shareable titles in your library. I'm not going to read this whole thing. It does say, best of all, when you're playing a game from your family library, you will create your own saved games, earn your own Steam achievements, have access to workshop files, and more. It enables you to play games from other family members' libraries, even if they are online playing another game. If your family library has multiple copies of a game, multiple members of the family can play that game at the same time, which is not anything new, right? And then it has a frequently asked question, and it talks about parental controls that allow parents to set limits on what children can play. Mac, what do you think about these changes and how they will affect the game industry? And I will ask some deeper questions in a minute, but let's start high level. What are your thoughts?
I have made use of Steam Family Sharing in the past, notably between myself and my brother-in-law. The one thing that was particularly difficult, though, was that I only had access when he was not playing any games whatsoever. And vice versa. If he hopped on, and let's say I was using his copy of...
Stardew Valley.
Yeah, sure, Stardew Valley, great. If I was using his copy of Stardew Valley, and then he hopped on to play anything in his library, I would be booted from the game that I was playing. And yeah, so that was a bit of a frustration, often because I was not playing the same game. You know, it was this sort of thing where his library would supplement mine, I'd be able to play some of his titles, and vice versa. And yeah, I love that. It reminds me a lot of like how we used to. Somebody that you really trusted, you'd lend a disc to or a cartridge to, and then be able to play and to do that. So I'm a big fan. Now, obviously, this doesn't come without its drawbacks.
Right.
I don't know what sort of issues are going to come if, say, for example, somebody runs afoul of an anti-cheat program.
Let's address that right now, because I did read about that, and it says that if someone gets banned for cheating, then it does ban the other person from that game.
Well, if it's just from that game, since it's not mine in the first place, I guess it's okay. But like, I wonder if that winds up being a kick that winds up going to the user who did it.
Well, no. It bans the person who owns the game.
Okay.
So if I'm playing a game, I'm playing Mac's copy of Call of Duty.
Mac's copy of Call of Duty. That's fresh. Sorry, carry on.
I used a silly example on purpose. Yeah. Then I cheat, then you're also banned.
Mm.
Now, I don't think you get banned from Steam completely, but I believe you get banned from that one game. And I'm going to find a source to back this up, but I read that earlier today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that I feel not ideal, but like that I can understand, you know, to some extent. And again, you just want to be sharing your games with people that you trust. So maybe this will wind up being a decent check or balance on the, you know, on the thing.
I'm so sorry, just to put a pin in this. So yeah. This is from help.steampowered.com. And frequently asked questions. What if a family member is caught cheating or committing fraud while playing my shared games? Your Steam family privileges may be revoked, and your account may also be VAC banned. I don't know what VAC banned means. If a member of your Steam family playing a game from you cheats or commits fraud. So you can get punished for my actions if I'm doing something silly using one of your games.
So VAC stands for Valve Anti-Cheat, which VAC bans are permanent, non-negotiable, and cannot be removed by Steam support. If a VAC ban, will ban the user from playing that game on anti-cheat servers in the future. So, yeah, it would keep you from playing that.
there's challenges that come with this new Steam feature, or rather with the updated feature of this previously allowed Steam opportunity. I guess, Mac, my question for you, at a time when we're seeing all types of layoffs in the gaming industry, is this the move? I get it. Like, I like the idea of being able to share a cartridge, right, in quotes, or a CD with my friends. And furthermore, some companies can just say we don't want our game to be allowed as part of sharing in this Steam thing. But I can't help but think that the more copies of games that are purchased, the better for the industry. That's just my stance. We're seeing so many layoffs right now.
We are seeing so many layoffs. And but last I checked, we were still buying video games at a reasonably high rate. So I don't think that the, you know, especially with the layoffs well preceding a shift in, you know, purchasing, I don't think we can do that.
That's fair. That's a good point.
If there is a big dip in video game purchasing as a result of this, I think some component of layoffs could be due to that, and that would be a shame, unless, and stick with me here, unless that encourages a lot more people to go indie on their own, and to throw off the shackles of the JoJo Mart and do more indie game making, in our own, you know, selfish way, is better for us, but I think is also better for gaming in general. We've talked about how there are video games that seem to be struggling to make a good experience on, you know, million-dollar budgets, millions of dollars budgets, and years upon years. Maybe it's worth asking if we aren't trying, if our reach isn't exceeding our grasp when it comes to video game experiences, and maybe if we should be taking long, hard looks at what we can do with adopting some constraints to our technical things. Maybe we don't need 200 gigabyte download sizes and day one patches that are 50% larger than the original download. Anyway, I'm just ranging over a whole lot of issues right now, so maybe I should rein it in.
No, I mean, we literally go out of our way each week, you and I, to with the exception of this week, to highlight games that aren't getting the attention they deserve. I can tell people we're reviewing some awesome games right now, and I look at Steam and they do not have a lot of reviews, which leads me to believe that they do not have a lot of sales. And so in some ways this could help those games get more attention, by allowing others to experience them, and maybe they leave another review even though only one copy of the game has been purchased. I don't know if that's allowed, but this has the potential for good. The last thing that I will say is I gotta give kudos to Steam. Despite some of my skepticism, they're taking the opposite stance that companies like Netflix are taking, where Netflix is saying, no, we don't want you sharing passwords, and we're gonna go so far as to look at your IP data and see if one person is in Kentucky and another person is in California, and we're gonna know that, oh, there's no way this is the same person. You're sharing passwords, right? And you're gonna have to pay extra to do that. Steam is saying, hey, let's let you experience these games if the developer has said they're okay with it, without you having to purchase an additional copy. And I think it's kind of cool. So, yeah. Mac, anything else on this topic?
Just that I agree with you. I think it's cool. I'm excited to try it out.
Awesome. That's been our topic of the week.
Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. I have posted a link in the chat so that anybody who's here with us live can have a look at this that we're considering. This is called The Crust. It's by VEOM Studios, which is their first project. And so it is essentially an automation building and resource management sim on the moon, complete with space elevator and everything. And oh my gosh, I love it. these types of games appeal to me, and something on the moon I think would be absolutely delightful. Now, the game itself, they're asking for $100,000 to get this completely funded. They're at about $92,000 of $100,000 with still 21 days to go, so they are probably going to make it. And it's a $25 minimum buy-in for a copy, and they're expected to launch in 4 months, in about July of 2024 here for this. So yeah, I mean, what more is there to say? Colonizing the moon, space elevator, resource management on the moon. I know I haven't given you much time, Mr. Nice Guy, and that 2-minute video on the Kickstarter shows some scenes, but mostly focuses a lot on sort of, I would say, the story rather than the substance. But yeah, anything anything stand out to you, my good man?
Yeah, so once again, you know, I analyze these always from my perspective as a gamer, but also just from my experience with different things like entrepreneurship and just the limited knowledge I have of business. And I think that this hits all of those notes on the business side, right? Because we always say if you're asking for money, you need to be paying yourself. These folks are asking for $100,000, and their estimated delivery date is only a few months away, which is great. You don't have to pay yourself as much in terms of salary if you're releasing the game in 3 months. Like, they're not asking the viewers or the people to fund their life. In my opinion, it seems that they are really asking people to fund the game. Now, of course, could they say, oh, it's delayed? You know, yeah, they could. And hopefully that doesn't happen. From a gamer perspective, this immediately gives me anxiety. To this day, I have still never finished Fallout 4 simply because I don't like games where I have to build stuff. And one of the last missions in that game, you had to build like a generator and make the power go, and all types of stuff. And this gives me those types of vibes.
Stardew Valley is not going to be a relaxing experience for you. I retract everything I was saying earlier.
I'm glad I shared this with you off the cuff, because I was actually thinking about buying Stardew Valley. But Stardew Valley is like 2D, so maybe I'd like it. So we'll see. But no, Mac, this looks great. They're asking for a reasonable amount of money and planning on putting the game out in a short amount of time. And the video is put together really, really well. And while this is not my jam, for people who like these types of games, this is going to be your jam. And it looks like it's really polished. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah. Now, there is one thing, Mr. Nice Guy. I like this. It shows a lot of promise, but I got a rule. You can't just say, you can't just have some pre-renders. You got to show me that you can bring the aspects of a video game together, and the way to do that is with a playable demo. And this, sadly, does not have a playable demo. But it did during Steam Next Fest.
Okay.
And so here's the question. Do I kick or kickstart? Because while I haven't been able to play it myself, people did get a chance to play it. So we know it's not, as they say, vaporware. And so even though this doesn't have a demo as part of the Kickstarter, just because I didn't get to it fast enough doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, or that, you know, that these guys can't do it. So I'm going to say that counts for me. I'm going to say kickstart. This does not have a playable demo as part of this, but we had a chance in Next Fest to play that playable demo, and I would love for it to have been included in the Kickstarter. But, you know, hey, you guys at least showed that you could do it, so, you know, that's good enough, I think. So kickstart from me.
Yeah, I give this one a kickstart as well. Not my jam, but I really like what they're doing. And I like, once again, I can't emphasize this enough. They're not asking us to fund their life. They're asking us to fund their game, assuming that it comes out then. And I think that's awesome. So kickstart from me. And the chat seems to agree.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, we'll keep things moving. It's time for Nerdflex. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts. Occasionally you do. Occasionally you do not. Mac, we got some questions in the test bank. And as you know, if you're here live and you'd like to ask a question, please put it in the chat. Gaming related, multiple choice. Nothing too dirty. We don't like the dirty questions. Mm-mm. Don't know why I said that in that accent. But Mac, first question is a Sonic question. How many characters did the player control simultaneously in Sonic Heroes?
Okay, I know this one.
Do you really? Okay, because I don't. Yeah, so I thought we'd have to talk through it.
Here's the thing. The answer is either one or three, because you had three characters that you rotated through one at a time to control, and you picked various teams. Team Sonic, Team Chaotix, Team whatever. And so in the main thing, it was Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles. But yeah, you swapped between them. So I believe the answer is one. However, the answer might be three, because that might be, being able to hot swap through characters might be good enough to be, air quotes, simultaneous. So,
yeah, I think that flipping through, I mean, I feel like the question doesn't exist if the answer isn't more than one. You know, because you always control at least one, right? There was a game I played back in the day called Elo Milo, where you're controlling each character at different times, but it's viewed as controlling them simultaneously. So I would lean towards three. What are you going to go with?
I will say one, but I believe that if it turns out to be three, I've justified why I would say one. So I've got no problem being wrong.
All right, let's flip it over and see what it says. And it does say three characters.
Okay.
So, you know, we wouldn't have gotten that one right if it wasn't for you. So well done.
No, shucks, thanks. Well, let's stop talking about me and talk about the Ishmobile crew that have a question for us. In the amazing game, Worms Armageddon, very, very true, which
game
of the following are accurate? So it's one of these. Is it A, you can set the fuse between 1 and 5 seconds? B, it won't explode until it comes to rest. That's like a throne thing. C, it does triple damage against the rabbit. Or D, it has less mass than a normal grenade. And here's what I'm thinking. I think we missed a thing. This must be about the holy hand grenade.
Here's the thing, too. It says which of the following are true. And I honestly think that more than one of these can be true.
Mm.
I don't think that it's just one.
I think that it is confirmed. We are talking about the holy hand grenade. But yeah, which of the following are true? I think it is just one of them.
Okay. Which one do you think it is?
Well, I think it would not be in keeping to have the fuse settable because, you know, that's... three must be the number counting. Four is right out. Five, you know, and so on.
Yeah.
It won't explode until it comes to rest. I'm going to say maybe it does triple damage against the rabbit. I don't remember a rabbit in it.
I don't either.
It has less mass than the normal grenade. I will say I feel like D. It's either B or D is what I think are the correct answers. But I'm leaning toward D.
It has less mass than the normal grenade. I was leaning towards Bravo.
Okay.
But well, it sounds like you've played more of this than I have.
I have, but I'm wobbling, leaning a little bit toward D. If you feel like Bravo, I'm cool with B as well.
I almost wonder if there's an exception where it could explode without coming to rest. And so I feel like that could be a trick answer.
Mm.
Just sitting here overthinking stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe we go with Delta. Maybe we go with your first instinct, which is Delta.
Okay, let's do Delta. D, final answer.
Final answer.
B.
Oh.
Unlike other grenades, it won't explode until coming to rest. As far as the fuse, Mac is right. Three is the only correct answer. Well, Mr. Nice Guy... You win some, you lose some, and other times the holy hand grenade comes for you.
That's exactly right. Well, let's do our last question, which is a Konami question. What gory movie series was made into a video game by Konami in 2009? What gory movie series was made into a video game by Konami in 2009?
Gory video game series.
Gory movie series gory was movie made into series. A video game. Yep.
Oh, gory so movie series was turned into a video
game.
It's got to be
made into
Saw.
A video game. Yeah. Is there a Saw video game? I feel like there is.
I mean, if there isn't, it's a missed opportunity.
Let's just go with Saw Final Answer.
All right, Saw Final Answer.
Oh my gosh, Mac, you're so good at this. It is indeed Saw.
Let's go. Okay, I'm feeling.
So what's that, 2 for 3 today?
Yeah, not too shabby at all.
That's been Nerdflex.
All right, well now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
First, a quick shout out to Snap Crackle Zap, who reached out and wanted to know more about Epic v. Apple and Google in light of certain recent events, which we'll get to. So, Snap Crackle Zap, as with many lawsuits, this stuff has been going on for a long time. Matter of fact, Lom and I first started talking about Epic v. Apple and Google back in, I believe, episode 136 is when there was first movement on this. We had commentary, you know, we talked as we got many updates in 153, 156, 178, 181, 87, 199, 248, 266. It's been a whole thing. And you can listen to any of those if you want more about how it's progressed. But as the brief recap, the things that we know, as opposed to the things that were just said in a vidya, in a PR, you know, push, the things that we know is several months before Epic decided that they were no longer going to honor the terms of their contract with Apple and Google, specifically, some of the provisions, like you can't deliberately hide code in game updates to try and sneak things past us, or that you have to give us, and by us I mean Apple, Google, you have to give us a cut of your sales from those on those mobile devices because we're hosting their game. Several months before, they started doing exactly that. And again, it was against the terms of contract. Now, when Epic, when it came to light that they had broken their contract with Apple and Google, they waited until Apple and Google found out about it. And then Apple and Google said, hey guys, you know, we're going to boot the games from our platforms because you broke these, you know, you broke your contract. And they also terminated some other things, such as the Unreal Engine. That was up in the air for a little while, and that's when the lawsuit started in earnest. Some things got stopped and held off for a while, other things went forward, and there is, again, so much to this story. It involves judges, it involves things going back and forth, and episode 199 is where we specifically talked about the how we knew that what Epic said to the public in their public statements about what they were doing were knowing lies that got called out in court. But in the United States, where this landed was that in the Epic v. Apple side of things, Epic lost 9 out of 10 of the things that they asked for in court. And Epic may still be trying to take that to the Supreme Court, but at the very least, at the trial level and at the appeal level, that has held. And against Google, Epic instead got a jury trial. And in that jury trial against Google, they found themselves, you know, being, I guess they more convincingly argued, or, you know, maybe Google seemed a lot worse, a lot less sympathetic. But they opted to find, the jury found in favor of Epic against Google in that. But why is this important? This is important, and it's being asked because Epic v. Apple and Google Down Under edition, I apologize to any of our Australian listeners, they also, Epic, also filed against these guys down in Australia. And the Australian courts, number one, put Apple and Google together. They're like, hey, we're similarly situated, so we're going to bundle this all together. And number two, they said, hey, why don't we just chill out and see how this goes in the U.S. court? And maybe that'll cause them to just drop it down here, or at least that'll give us a lot of the discovery, a lot of the things that would be useful for adjudicating this. And so now that that is finally pretty much done, the Australian court is heading toward. Now, I'm not a lawyer, right? I barely know law in the United States, and I'm not gonna opine on how things are going to go in Australia, but it's definitely something that we're going to keep an eye on. And just in closing about Epic v. Apple and Google, and I can't stress this enough, neither of these sides is your friend. Epic has been locking down games, spent a lot of the time in 2020 directly lying to the public, as we detailed in episode 199. Epic has unclean hands, but Apple and Google aren't any better. And while the best thing that can be said about this is that they did not break the terms of the contract that they wrote, that they got to dictate to Epic, you know, that's not exactly a high bar. And it's not great. And, you know, something workable under those circumstances. I don't have sympathy for either of these sides, but it's worth, you know, keeping in mind and always remembering what at dispute here was that Epic didn't want to continue to pay the money that they contractually agreed to pay these other two. And it's not a thing about the gamer. It's about them trying to put some more money in their pocket, and that's it. And anything more than that is, you know, PR buzz that we know that they have acknowledged, again, see episode 199, that we know they acknowledged were outright fabrications and was not at all what they were planning on. So, you know, keep in mind, only believe what companies say under penalty of perjury. That's some legalese for you.
Mac, that's an awfully cynical look at the world, man.
I mean, if they weren't being such, you know, tossers, I wouldn't have to be so cynical.
Mac's my bestie. Mac's my bestie.
Ah, he just has to remind himself.
Hey.
I love you, brother.
I've known him for a long time.
Calm He's blue ocean.
Yeah. Hey, that has been episode 301. But before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms. Mac, What have you been watching and playing?
Well, for watching Mr. Nice Guy, I've been going back and watching. I'm in season 8 of Taskmaster, fun British game show, staffed completely by comedians. It's wild and fun watching their minds work. It's a good time. Hot 10 out of 10, do recommend. Also, that's kind of all that I've been watching. Although, for playing, though, a couple of good things. A game we'll talk about probably next time. Also, Metroid Prime Trilogy on the Wii that I picked up like a month ago or so. I've been doing some more of that.
Nice.
Also, I got a rare opportunity to play like 3 rounds of Dungeons and Dragons, two of which, or one of which was in person this last week. And
nice.
So, yeah, it was a good time. We supported our local library and showed up to a thing there and had a fantastic time. I got to use the line from Han Solo, slight weapons malfunction, but we're all fine here. Everything's fine. How are you? And that was a good time. So anyway, that's been me. What about you, Mr. Nice Guy? What have you been watching and playing?
Dude, so not as much playing as I'd like. I've obviously been playing the games we're reviewing, and I'm excited to talk about them. One show I've been watching, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the pod before, is 007 Road to a Million. And it is on Amazon Prime. It's a pretty cool show. It has a James Bond theme, but it's a reality show. And they take teams of two. They're out in the wilderness. They're traveling. They're completing different tasks. And then the goal is that they have to get this chest, or it's actually more of a briefcase, open it up, and then they have a multiple choice question that they have to answer. Sometimes this is after they've dealt with a box full of snakes. Sometimes it's after they've been, you know, harnessed in and they're experiencing their fear of heights, doing different climbs. Sometimes it's after a long, long hike or traversing some water. And then ultimately they answer this multiple choice question with no cell phone help. And if they get it right, they stay in the game. If they get it wrong, they're eliminated. And so they're traveling across the world. There's multiple teams of two. It's a really dope show. And my wife and I have been enjoying it. As far as playing, Mac, still doing a lot of retro stuff. Loving my Analog Pocket. Playing Mole Mania, which I think I mentioned weeks before was the Miyamoto game that is kind of forgotten, and started playing my old childhood copy of Metroid Fusion again and having some fun with that. I gotta say game of the year, Helldivers 2. I've been playing a good amount of Helldivers 2, and it's interesting, Mac. All my friends in their 30s, in their late 20s, are playing Helldivers. Many of them are playing Helldivers 2. And so I never have a shortage of people to squad up with. Many listeners of the show playing Helldivers 2, and we've had some fun. So that's it for me.
Well, kind of quiet here in the chat, but the Ishmobile crew has us covered for watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and nice. For playing Wanderer, which is a VR title that is not quite, I believe the conversation earlier, is not quite as great as the controls in Alex, but still good. GoldenEye Source, Worms Armageddon, of course, and Worms Revolution. Sounds like a fantastic time with the Ishmobile crew.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in to episode 301. We appreciate you, and hopefully you appreciate us too. I just said that because it rhymes. Hey, we'll be back next week or the week after because I'm going to be in Myrtle. Mac may bring a guest host next week. I don't know what his plans are, but you'll have to wait to see. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Video games are art. Be excellent to each other. See you soon.
Bye.